Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sustainability as Strategy, a podcast brought to you by the experts at Roland Berger Americas. My name's Sean McMahon, and for this episode, we're going to be focusing on power generation and the grid. Joining me for this conversation is Ben Lowe, a partner at Roland Berger Americas. Ben, how are you doing today?
Great, Sean. Good to see you. How are things?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm excited for this conversation because there's a lot of news making headlines in the energy industry. So let me start right at the top. When someone like you looks out there, what are some of the key topics that are dominating conversations?
I think it's impossible to talk about the energy and electricity system these days without really talking about data centers. And really, it's driven by AI, driven by, you know, a lot of the computational demand required to run some of these algorithms. And these are huge entities, right? Some of these are power plant sized, city sized in terms of the amount of electricity that they require. And it's not really a smooth addition to the grid like we've typically experienced historically. These are very big steps that we're being asked to jump in a very short period of time. And so we're seeing that really distort not just power grids in general and utility planning, but also energy equipment supply chains and a lot of other related entities and companies in this ecosystem. It's quite fascinating.
And now you mentioned how the system's being asked to make this giant leap, a giant jump. And obviously there's many challenges that need to be overcome, for that leap to be made. What are some of the top two or three?
The main challenge really is one of speed. The grid itself is not prepared, nor are really utilities, to move as quickly as data centers really demand and as quickly as they want to connect these facilities to the grid. And so you also have, an energy equipment infrastructure also not really prepared to move as fast. And you have to remember that from 2000 to 2020, there really wasn't a lot of demand growth on the grid to speak of. And so a lot of the power plants that were built in 1999, 2002 or so really have carried us until now because we really overshot capacity then and lived on that for the last two decades. And then suddenly with data centers and really the focus on data centers is in the U.S. where there's about 50% of the market is really stressing that ecosystem together. Not only are utilities and grid operators struggling to react quickly, so too is the supply chain. Because really, in the face of declining demand for turbines, for example, a lot of that capacity was mothballed or transitioned to other products, right? Like transformers or other things entirely. And so just the incredible whipsaw of what we're going through is really quite unprecedented. And we're asking some very key industry players to move much faster than they've really ever moved in their history.
And now you mentioned supply chain, right? And, transformers, inverters, gas turbines, things like that. So where are some of the big hurdles there when it comes to trying to evolve quickly?
So the biggest hurdle is really getting the natural gas turbines we need to power these incredible demands on the grid, along with growth in the ordinary course of business. And remember, in addition to data centers, right, we now have onshoring of manufacturing. We have, in some states, electrification of space heating and mobility and just general economic growth. And so all of this together is really stressing this one supply chain. And in some ways, the extent to which data centers can connect, the extent to which we can electrify and onshore manufacturing is really limited by the number of gas turbines we can install on the grid in any one year.
All right. So there's obviously some, you said gas turbines, there's the manufacturing that you said had been mothballed. And now we're trying to ramp that back up. Anyone who pays attention to these markets knows that policy changes have also been announced. What are some of the biggest ones you're seeing on that front?
I think PJM interconnection is a great example of all of these challenges in a single constrained point of view, right? So PJM interconnection, one of the biggest, most sophisticated electric grids in the United States, sort of the stock exchange for the buying and selling of electricity. They serve the mid-Atlantic to Pennsylvania and then west to Ohio, parts of Michigan and Illinois. And they've seen a lot of demand for data centers in their Virginia area, right? And that's because of favorable state tax policy that attracts this kind of development. The other challenge, though, is that PJM really depends on market signals to build generation. And so what we've seen even recently is that the market is working as it's supposed to when faced with significant demands for new generation. But I think the challenge is that in many ways, the signal to build has come, but because of supply chains, the new supply won't come much later, right? We're talking 5 to 7 years for a new gas turbine at this point in time.
Wait, let me just jump in there, Ben. 5 to 7 years for gas turbines? I've been hearing that lead time for fast nuclear, but you're saying even gas assets are a few years down the road.
Absolutely right. GE, Vernova, Mitsubishi, Siemens, those are the big three gas turbine OEMs. Say they together comprise 60 to 70% of the market, you know, ballpark. Not only are they limited by their own manufacturing capacity, but they're limited also by their upstream suppliers, particularly around blades and vanes. And so what you have a lot of them thinking through now is, not only do I need to think about expanding my own production facilities, but how then can I also work with my suppliers to make them more productive so that I get the parts I need to hit and satisfy this just incredible demand. And so taken together then, you just have what is ultimately a fairly long lead time for these assets. And what's really interesting is, you know, not only are electric utilities trying to get reservation slots to buy turbines in the future, but you're also seeing now data center players and others almost, you know, whose electric demand are somewhat similar to utilities, frankly, you know, doing the same thing. And so given all of that, it's as simple as saying, you know, too much demand, too little supply. I think the one thing that's really interesting to watch out for also on policy is looking at states who are going to start asking data center owners and operators to start paying their own way, which is to say, if you're adding such a significant amount of demand on my grid, it is not fair for my other customers to subsidize you on that. And so this can be solved in the sense of data centers having to bring their own generation or data centers entering into very specific contracts to acknowledge and pay for the capacity that they are causing to be added to the grid and incremental costs. And a lot of that is very new. And so while, you know, we've just had record high capacity prices in PJM for that reason, we'll see in the next years ahead whether these kinds of actions are able to, you know, kind of temper demand a little bit such that prices then ultimately come down, because it's really going to be the data centers who are responsible for paying for this.
All right. So we're talking about policy, and I want to ask you a question about political risk related to AI data centers. The Interior Department recently announced a new policy where virtually every project is going to go right up to the secretary and maybe even President Trump for approval. And so if I'm a big tech CEO and I've got a huge data center project getting ready to come online and I'm going to power that with my own generation, is there any risk to, you know, maybe getting sideways with the administration and upsetting the wrong people, and suddenly the power that I've been really, really banking on for my AI data center, that piece of my project gets a thumbs down from Interior or the White House? How big of a risk is that?
I think it's a moderate risk. I think what you're describing is really is an extension of the elimination of subsidies for really solar, wind, other intermittent renewables in the Big Beautiful Bill Act. And if you remember when Trump signed that shortly after he issued this executive order, which you just described. And so really what they're doing, right, is they're throwing as much sand in the gears of renewables as possible. On the other hand, and this is probably a terrible visual, but it's kind of what they're doing, they're pouring buckets of oil on the gears for nuclear and for gas. And frankly, that is the generation you want as a data center operator anyway. And so, you know, to the extent you need solar for, you know, sustainability reasons or other things, right, you know, maybe then it's an issue. But for true operations of the data center itself, you know, the administration is very much in favor of the baseload technologies you want and need for your facility.
Yeah, and that's one of those unique scenarios where both sides, you know, the data center operators and the utilities, are hesitant to sign any long-term contracts, right?
Exactly.
Data centers aren't quite sure how much they're going to use and if they might become more efficient, and the utilities don't want to have any stranded assets out there.
Exactly right. And I think that, you know, that's the other challenge of this too, because, you know, everyone wants jobs, everyone wants economic development, everyone wants advancement and growth. The challenge, though, is how to figure out a way to do this in as fair a way as possible, right? And so that's really what policymakers are trying to think through and balance. And that's ultimately all of what has to be gone through here to reconcile this. What I will say, though, that's really interesting, right, is Ohio's not alone in trying to level the playing field a little bit more. We're seeing this in Missouri. We're seeing this in North Carolina, and even of all places, Texas. And Texas is very interesting because it's its own hermetically sealed electric grid from the rest of the United States. But what they said recently was, we will not guarantee you, data center operator, firm power because of the incredible cost that it creates for our customers. And so there is a point in time in the future where the grid gets constrained, we will disconnect you. And so I'm really interested to see how that then translates into market prices going forward, especially given, and we know about inflation and everything else, a real focus now by policymakers, you know, not just on reliability, but also affordability.
And so you mentioned how these data centers have a couple of options. They can either pay the utility for all the power they need, or bring their own generation to the equation. And that makes me want to talk about co-location. And you mentioned PJM. Recently, the watchdog for PJM suggested that data center operators who can bring their own power to the grid should be prioritized by PJM and brought online perhaps quicker. Co-location's been talked about for years, whether it's gas or renewables. How do you see that shaken out?
I think he's right. And I think that's the ultimate end game here, because I think it's not only in the interest of electric customers and ratepayers writ large, because if the, you know, the same market monitor who you're talking about at PJM also recently said that you can attribute basically 90 to 95% of this recent capacity price spike to data centers. And so basically at the end of the day, I think that's how it ends. I think it's in the interest certainly of the kind of using and consuming public as we talk about it, but I think it's also in the interest of data centers because, you know, frequently they really care about speed to power. And if you can stay out of the interconnection queue, if you can stay out of utility rate cases and other quasi-judicial proceedings, it really makes everything go much faster. And so I think that over time, we will see more of that. And certainly, especially in Texas, of all places, but even in other states.
And, you know, we keep coming back to that topic of speed, right? So you mentioned how gas turbines could be a few years down the road. Nuclear is perhaps even more. So what are you seeing as the best solution for these data center operators that are want to bring their own generation, but what technology is they going to use to generate that power at their own sites?
That is the million-dollar question. And then we've done a lot of work on this and have a lot of opinions in terms of what that other mix of technology could be. I think the real challenge that you're accounting for is that these are very high load factor customers. If you think of a tier four data center operator, that's 4.9s reliability. And very few technologies other than, you know, nuclear or gas or something like that can really achieve that on their own. And so I think they have some questions to think about, which is, first of all, where am I in the country, right? Because that ultimately decides the resources you think about. And then second of all, what is that basket or portfolio of technologies that I can create synthetically, maybe, you know, a more reliable, firmer baseload kind of service that I need? I think it's very potentially difficult. It's not an easy answer. But what I see happening, though, are, you know, more conversations around that. Suffice it to say, also, you know, finding pockets of other availability for turbines of any size, frankly, that they can even kind of smash together, you know, to create the kind of, you know, solution that they need for their overall operation. I mean, the real challenge is, like, anything other than gas is very hard and expensive.
Okay, so we've covered the topic of data centers and the demand that they're placing on utilities and, you know, really how that riddle is going to be solved. Are there other solutions that utilities can look to and you know, that can help the grid not only become stronger, but more resilient? You know, we hear a lot about demand response, you know, solutions like that. So what are you seeing on those topics?
I think demand response is a very unique asset. And I think done right can bring incremental capacity to a utility grid when it needs it. I think the biggest challenge with demand response is really the response part. It really requires sometimes customers to do things that they may not want to do. For a homeowner, it may mean cycling your air conditioner on an otherwise really warm day or cycling your heat pump on an otherwise very cold day. And so there's a real trade-off potentially between saving the grid and earning a rebate. Sometimes it's not really all that much money versus your own comfort. And then secondly, right on the industrial side, very similar program. But then the question is, do I really need to stop my production? Do I really need to interrupt what I'm doing? Again, for somewhat of a rebate, but not a huge amount of money to hold and help the grid. I think we've seen this really play out in two ways across the country. One, if you're thinking about virtual power plants, you can aggregate a series of homes. It can be via service disruption, using batteries, using solar, or it can be really just focusing on an air conditioning unit. And I think it works, right? But it also requires, almost a heavy hand to make work, where the utility does it for you without you really, being able to decide potentially as much as you want. And where I live in the Carolinas, Duke Energy, through some very severe weather we had heat-wise, was able to call on close to 500 megawatts of demand response, which is just about the size of a combined cycle gas turbine. So, again, I think it works, but I think it also requires taking some of the choice away from people if you really are going to rely on it as a firm resource.
So when we're talking about the future of the grid, there's building out the capacity we need, and there's also an affordability factor. And, we've talked about PJM. They just announced that they're predicting rates will go up about 1.5 to 5% based on just, what they're having to pay to acquire the electricity they need. So how can that be balanced? We've talked about these huge manufacturers and data centers that need so much power, but then there's also ratepayers, the smaller businesses that can't quite afford these jumps in prices or might not be able to afford to just kind of come offline as part of a demand response because their competitors aren't. So where does affordability fit into all this?
No, that's a great point. If you think about just what determines electric rates, right, there's a lot of parallels to tax policy. And so really, at the end of the day, a utility or a power market needs to be made whole for whatever their costs are. And then it's just a matter of who will pay for it, right? And frequently, the way you pay for it is on volume. And so if you think about how rates are set, it's the total revenue we need divided by the forecasted consumption of my product. And so one way historically to keep rates low but drive growth has been to attract economic development and attract, industrials, attract a lot of other players, attract the employees that they need. I think the challenge is that data centers are such a large step change, one, and then two, they don't really have a lot of employees over which to really kind of spread those incremental costs as well. And so really the challenge for utilities and power markets is finding that right balance of consumption growth with cost growth. Ideally, if they're at least somewhat the same, you can increase the costs and pay for all of these assets, right, that you need to modernize the grid. But at the same time, really try to mitigate the kind of cost pressure to customers, right? And that can be industrials or residential homeowners. I think another way to think about this too, right, is, and this is the challenge of the utilities, of the power market operators, is really thinking about how to have more efficient operations. How can we really try to deliver electric service at the safest, most reliable, but yet cost-effective level? And I think that it's ultimately going to land there, but that's also not a simple challenge, right? Because you have to balance having electricity, you have to balance safety and reliability. No one likes it when it's interrupted. And so in some ways it's an answer, in some ways it's a non-answer. But I think thinking about economic development, thinking about delivery efficiency and operational efficiency, those are really the two levers that you can pull here.
And now we've spent a good deal of time talking about where businesses and homeowners and other ratepayers are going to get their power. But now I want to shift and talk about where utilities are going to get their power supply.
Mm-hmm.
So resource planning is a huge endeavor for utilities. And I think that some of the policy changes that have gone on might be kind of changing where they're planning to get that power, right? We've heard about some renewables projects either getting delayed or getting canceled. And so now utilities got to kind of map out where they're going to get everything from, you know, on a changing board of chess pieces, right? So what are you hearing in the market on that?
I'm hearing a few things. I think if you think about how utilities, and here we're talking about regulated utilities, plan their systems, they go through what's called an integrated resource plan. And in this plan, it's a forecasted demand plus their available generation supply. And so really what they do is say, okay, if demand is growing, but I don't have enough supply, I then need to build new resources. And the drivers of, you know, the need for new supply can also be that a lot of my existing power plants are too old, they're too polluting, or, you know, a lot of other things that we really don't want to solve for. And so what they then do and say is, okay, what is the basket of resources that I can use or technologies that I could use to provide electric service subject to my aforementioned constraints? It can be affordability, it can be emissions, it can be speed, it can be a lot of things. And so really what happens then is that, you know, these generation costs, these technology costs are really influenced by the subsidies and tax credits available to it from federal governments, from state governments, from whoever. What's just happened, obviously, is that whole rule book that companies had been planning towards since the IRA was approved in 2022 is now completely redone and kind of null and void. And so what that really means is that utilities almost have to go back to the drawing board to say, based on these new generation technology economics, what is that optimal portfolio and how can I think about it to satisfy, again, you know, the constraints that I'm solving for, with those constraints being really determined not just by the utility, but the state in which they operate, as well as stakeholders. And so, you know, maybe utilities that anticipated using tax credits for solar probably have to rethink things. You know, I think energy storage is another really interesting item here, not really because of the tax credit, but because of what we consider now a foreign entity of concern. And so if you buy a battery, for example, from Chinese controlled companies or a list of companies specifically enumerated in the law, you are not eligible for tax credits. And what's really interesting about that, again, now going back to supply chains, is there's really no other OEMs to buy functioning lithium ion batteries for but these companies. And the companies that were identified in the law, CATL, Gotion, Eve, these are all tier one suppliers, which, again, in addition to those, BYD is one of them, 50 to 60% of the stationary storage market. And so, again, that's a real challenge. Even if you wanted to do renewables plus storage, now you have to think about, well, where do I source this battery from and what happens? Energy, you know, these OEMs had already kind of picked up from China and were already looking to build operations in Southeast Asia and India, right? As kind of concern over tariffs happened and they felt like they had to adjust back during the first Trump administration. Now they're going to find out that even those moves aren't necessarily sufficient because it's a blanket application now to these sorts of companies.
And now, so let me see if I understand you correctly. So there's so many moving pieces to this whole puzzle of trying to figure out where you can get your power, when it's going to come online, what your supply chain looks like. I want to talk about interconnection queues and how all that plugs into interconnection queues, because we've heard for years how they're just backed up, you know, years and years of waiting and waiting. So I guess there's two ways to think about it. Those wait times could grow, you know, if there's this era of American energy dominance, but might they also shrink because you have projects that are kind of falling out of the queue, right? Like, for example, offshore wind, right? Those projects are falling out of the queue. And so do you see interconnection queues getting longer or shorter?
It's a great question. I think there are a couple of things, right? So the interconnection queue, the interconnection process, what that really means is it's a way for grid planners to account for new generation that has to be literally plugged into the grid. And so really what they're testing for is, can the grid reliably accept this generation without causing widespread damage? And so there's a lot of ways and a lot of things they check for, you know, capacity, injection capacity being probably among the biggest one, right? Think of about a substation in a transformer. What happened historically was as we moved away from central station generation to more, you know, solar based, more renewable based, you know, we needed a lot more projects. A lot more projects were created to really compensate for that shift to renewables. And that frankly just overwhelmed interconnection and grid planners. And so, you know, there's a lot of nuance here in terms of how assets are studied, how they think about all of this together. Do they look at all applications in a year? Do they look at it just one at a time? But at the end of the day, right, what you get out of interconnection studies are the costs you as a developer have to pay to make any upgrades so that your project can be interconnected or connected. And so the challenge is that, and the delays are really from a lot of studies and restudies as people get answers they don't want, they have to redo it. And that has been, you know, a lot of the problem and a lot of the challenge. With less favorable incentives, it would certainly appear to be the case that, yes, we would expect those kind of marginal borderline projects to drop out. And I think that's what will happen. But I also think that if load forecasts are right in that if the number of data centers and the amount of data center demand will actually materialize or has a good chance of materializing, we're going to need every electron we can possibly find. We'll be looking everywhere under couch cushions, period, full stop. And so because of that, we'll see if queues really materially slow down. Because at the end of the day, it's not just volume, but it's then how they do the study, especially when developers get answers they don't like.
All right. Now, you just alluded to something that segues perfectly to my next question about data centers. You mentioned how if all these AI data centers and, you know, hyperscalers come online, we're going to need every electron we can get. But you said if. Do you think all these projects will come online? I mean, we're hearing these announcements about tens or hundreds of billions of dollars in AI data center investment, but there's a big difference between making an announcement like that and actually bringing that data center online.
I think that's exactly right. And I think that's the million-dollar question. And I think that resolving that key uncertainty would really solve a lot of the challenges that we're having now. It would solve market pricing. It would solve supply chains. It would solve a lot of things. And so I think the reality is that utilities, as we know, really like increased demand. They really want to justify incremental capital expenditure, investment, and rate base, right? That's how they make money. I think the challenge is that data center developers are really forum shopping here, right? So they'll make the same request in multiple states, but in some cases, like especially if you're in PJM, if someone's in Ohio, if someone's in Pennsylvania, Virginia, New Jersey, it's possible that PJM sees that for every number of states versus kind of the single project that there is. And the other challenge is, you know, again, if you're in a business that really requires incremental capital investment, it's really in your incentive to not think too seriously about this and say, hey, we got all of this demand coming, we got to really build. And so that's kind of the situation. What I think ultimately happens is, yes, we will see significant data center growth and significant data center installations to the grid, but it's going to be much less than what we anticipate. And it's going to be further out to the right, further out into the future, because if it is true, there are only so many turbines you can buy in a given year and have them delivered. And right now, if you take all the utility load forecasts for data centers, it's, you know, two and a half times the capacity you can get from turbines in a given year. So I think in that sense, that has to be some sort of a governor here in terms of what can actually get done and when. I think the other challenge, though, is that it's really on power markets and other, you know, network operators to really think seriously about what is realistic versus not because of the downstream impacts on prices and affordability and everything else.
Now, I want to bring this back to the audience of Roland Berger clients. If I'm running a business and my business needs a ton of power, whether it's AI data center stuff or just power to manufacture whatever I'm manufacturing, how should I be watching all this? And what are some of the cues I should be looking for to really make myself smarter about what my costs are going to be in the near and long term?
That's a great question. And frankly, this whole conversation has been conversations we're having to clients like the one you mentioned. We certainly don't say good luck, but there is a little bit of luck. But at the end of the day, it's really thinking through, you know, can you find a site? Does the site have the infrastructure you need? Does it have the resource potential you need? And then how can you think about finding a way to position yourself optimally for the equipment that you need so that you get it at the time, at the price, and everything else you need, such that your growth plan, such that your production is not unduly limited or inhibited, I would say. And so, you know, there are a lot of things that can be done as part of this, right? Obviously, everyone's situation is unique. There's no one size fits all here. But working through these challenges is what we're doing in real time right now and into the near future, I think.
Well, listen, Ben, these are fascinating times to be watching the grid and kind of working in everything that has to do with power generation in the United States. I truly appreciate your insights today.
Enjoyed it, Sean. Thanks for the opportunity.